they are 98% effective when used correctly, but the correct use is from the beginning to the end, and that actually isn't what happens in a lot of practical settings.
It was so painful, and because I kept tensing up, and so it just wasn't working out. And then she was like, look, do you just want to go home and then come back another time? I was like, oh, okay. Pills, condoms, coils, implants. What do you use and why? Well, we know why, but why did you choose that particular method and how is it working out for you? My name is Reena Diptianabil, aka Mommy Imperfect, and you're listening to The Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect, your weekly dose of unfiltered girl chat about all things womanhood. So you may have guessed already what my guest and I are going to be talking about in this episode. Yes, it's contraception, something which women don't really talk openly about, especially brown women. If you're a brown woman, right, you can't openly talk about it when you're young and you need to talk about it because you're not supposed to be having sex or even thinking about sex. And then when you're a bit older and you have had kids and you don't openly talk about it because you've had your kids, so you cease to be a sexual being, apparently, and then you're just not doing it for fun, obviously. And I guess you could talk about it like just before you get married, but then according to the community, that's when you're supposed to try for kids. So why would you be talking about contraception, right? So here we are today, though, to talk about it because it is something that needs to be talked about. And before I carry on talking about it, let me introduce my guest. You may have heard her voice before on this podcast. It's dancing Dr. Nijjar Joshi. Hi, Dr. Nijjar. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited to talk about all things contraception with you.
So this is your area, one of your areas of expertise, isn't it, as a doctor?
Yeah, so I work as a GP, but I've done a lot of work in the GUM clinics of sexual and reproductive health, and I did an additional qualification in it. So I love all things contraception, and I'm always the go-to person to ask contraceptive questions in the surgery, which is great. Mm-hmm.
So do you fit coils and things like that as well?
So personally, no, but I, as part of my training, I attended and assisted with lots of coil fittings. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the good and the not so good side of what can happen during a coil fitting. But I chose not to train in it just yet because it's quite a complex thing to do, actually.
Mm. Okay. So why do you think that we need to talk about contraception? Like, why are people so reluctant to talk about it? Like, surely it should be a thing that daughters can talk to their moms about, or, you know, friends can talk to each other about, because sometimes we don't.
No, absolutely. I mean, from my perspective as a doctor, I learned a lot about contraception, and what I've learned is that there is no kind of best contraception. Different things work differently for different people. Yeah. So you ask 100 people who have been on the pill, they will have 100 different experiences. Some will swear by it and some will have had awful experiences. So it's really important to have those open conversations, because often when I have a patient come to me to change contraception, it's because they've had one conversation with one friend that said, this worked for me, it will work for you. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So actually, we do need to be having more than just that one conversation with that one friend one time to actually make that informed decision about what we're doing to our bodies.
Yeah, like I feel like I can talk to my friends about it now. Like, I don't know, maybe when you're younger, it's kind of, I don't know, it was different for me growing up. Like, you know, I'm 42 and I've had 3 children, and when we were younger, like, I think it's a bit different now, but it was like, if anyone was to mention, oh, I'm gonna go on the pill, it's like, oh my god, she's having sex, oh my god, you know what I mean? And it was kind of like a thing that divided people, because there were people that did, or they had boyfriends, and then some people that didn't, or some people that had an arranged marriage, you know. So that was there now, because, you know, it's like we're older and have had kids or in a relationship or whatever, so you will talk about it, and it's just one of those things that we know everybody has to think about it, so we will, right? But I wanted to talk about it today because I felt like a conversation opened up in the media last week when Naga Manshetty, on her 5 Live radio show, she talked about the horrific ordeal that she went through when she had a coil fitted, which includes her screaming in pain and fainting. Like, it just sounded absolutely awful.
Yes. No, and to be completely honest, in my experience of seeing coils fitted, I have seen that. I have seen it. So what she's experienced is not I absolutely wouldn't deny her experience. It is an experience of having a coil fitted, but equally, and she also admitted this herself, that a lot of women have coil fitted with no problem at all. In fact, they feel a slight pinch and they walk out of the room like nothing's happened. So
yeah,
there is a real spectrum of how that can go. The one thing that I wanted to really empower women to do is to find out and seek out information. So find out if you're going to do something like a coil fitting, what are the risks? What are the benefits? Are you willing to take, every procedure has a risk associated with it. But also, I think there is a feeling as a woman, because I opened up this conversation with my friends and my colleagues as well, and there's a feeling that once you're on that table, that then you can't say no. And that's actually really not true. So if there's one take home from today, I'd want women to explore the possibilities. But if you are having a coil fitted and you are in lots of pain, distress, you do have an option to stop, and that is okay. And you just have to have that open communication with the clinician beforehand. And they should tell you that, raise your hand if you want to stop. We did it all the time. It was standard practice. But I think there is a feeling as a woman that if you've committed to going through with a procedure, that you should carry on regardless of pain. And that's not true.
You know, like, I think there's this thing of when women go to have things like smear tests, like, no one goes there and go, oh, that was really lovely. You know, it's never pleasant, is it? Sometimes it's not unpleasant, but no one's ever said to me, oh, yeah, it's just fine, open my legs, la, la, la. You know, so we think, oh, yeah, it's going to be horrible, and we're prepared for it to be uncomfortable. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's this thing. It's like period pains. It's like childbirth. We just have to go through that pain. And that's really horrible. And I have to say that when I got my coil fitted, and this was like after my third child, I had to actually go home because they couldn't do it for some reason. Like, I think it was so painful, and because I kept tensing up, and so it just wasn't working out. And then she was like, look, do you just want to go home and then come back another time? I was like, oh, okay. And I think because it was quite soon after having the baby that maybe I was still sore down there, I don't know, but it was horrific. And then the second time I went back, I was like, oh my god, okay. And then I was literally squeezing the life out of the nurse's hand, and they were really nice, and the doctor was she specialized in that, in fitting coils. She was doing them all the time, you know. And the nurse was nice, and they were nice and supportive, but it wasn't great, you know?
No, it's not a nice feeling. And I'm with you that as women, we put up with a lot of things and a lot of pain, and the onus is always on the women to do these things. And it's not a pleasant experience. Some women find it less unpleasant than others, you're right. But I think your experience is exactly correct, that they did the right thing, that if it wasn't working, to just abandon ship for the day, because to keep trying if things aren't working. And the best thing you can do during a coil fitting or a smear test is to relax. When you tense any muscles down below, it makes the procedure so much harder. But try telling a woman in that position to relax. It's the worst thing you can do. So it's all about the atmosphere, the ambiance, the people that are there, and how you're feeling. And you can't manufacture that experience. It has to happen with all of those things, and you have to feel right when it's being done, otherwise it won't be the most pleasant experience. But having said that, it's one day and you might get some discomfort thereafter, but actually that means no pill taking for several years. So actually, and it's a 99% effective is a copper coil, so actually to have that in is a very effective method of contraception. So some women prefer, you know, I'd rather just have a couple of days of not feeling great and then have 5 years of not having to think about it. So, it's a conversation. It's a risk versus benefit, and it's an individual choice. And it depends on what people want, really.
I never, ever considered the coil before. Like, I can't believe I'm actually talking about what I have done contraception-wise, like, out and loud. But I don't care anymore. I think I've got to the stage where I don't care anymore, and it's like, hello, this podcast is supposed to be about womanhood, and that's a big thing that we actually have to consider and think about, because we don't just want to have like 100 kids if we're able to have them, you know. With the coil, I think I never ever thought about it until somebody, I think the doctor might have suggested it, like, you know, because I was like, I don't want to do pills anymore. I don't want to do anything like that. It's screwing me up hormone-wise. And I'll talk about that with you in a bit. But I was like, I don't want any hormones in me. I don't want that. I want to take a break from that. So someone said, copper coil. I was like, oh, okay. You know, it's like a localized copper thing or whatever. Yeah. Let me try it. But they did say to me, your periods might get really heavy, but oh my God, were they heavy. Like, they were like wearing tampons and maxi pads at the same time, yes. Kind of heavy.
Yeah. And did that ever calm down, or was it always, has it always been that bad?
It didn't calm down. I got used to it. I was like, okay, you know, fine. I can deal with this. I'll just wear tampons and pads at the same time. And, you know, and that heaviness was certainly for like, I don't know, 3 days, and then it kind of calmed down every time. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be ready for this, and just kind of was all right with it, because I'm like, I'm not having hormones in my body. It's okay. But then what happened was I started to get random bleeding. And this was after a few years. I started to get random bleeding at weird times, or I'd have a 2-week period, or it would be like the really heavy bit, and then there'd be like little bit spotting for a week and a half. And I was like, oh my God, like half the month is some kind of a period. I can't deal with this anymore. And then I now have a Kylena coil, yes. Which is, I mean, it's hormones, but it's not as it's bad less, as it's. Dose. I mean, you can just say what it is, because I can't really explain.
Yeah. So with coils, you've got two main types. You've got the copper coil, which is the non-hormonal coil, like you said, and that is very effective at contraception. It can even be used as emergency contraception. So say you were going to have the morning after pill, this is actually a really effective way of doing that, and you get ongoing contraception. So most people don't know that that's actually something that can happen with a copper coil, and it works by irritating the lining of the womb. It's also thickens the cervical mucus, so yeah. It's a very effective contraception. What I do say though is that the main side effect with the copper coil is heavier and longer periods, like exactly like what you explained. So a lot of people have the preconception they don't want hormones in their body, which I understand. But what I ask people is, what is your normal period before the coil? And the women who I personally recommend it to the most are people who say, well, my period is 3 days and it's very light and I can barely feel it. Never taken a day off work for a period. Never need to take a Nurofen. They are probably going to get what most people would call a normal period. So 5 to 7 days of bleeding, heavy and then lighter. If you have a normal period, then to begin with, and with a copper coil, it's going to get worse. And generally speaking, so you will get heavier bleeding and you will get bleeding for longer. If your periods are a baseline, heavy and painful, that is going to be very difficult for you, in my experience. Then the other type of coil is a hormonal coil. So these are called IUS, so intrauterine system, and the copper coil is called an IUD, intrauterine device. So the IUS, generally the main one that people know about is the Mirena coil. So that is, again, implanted locally in the womb, releases a low dose of hormones, keeps the womb lining nice and thin. It's actually, anecdotally, the most liked contraception by doctors and nurses. So that's the most popular one that doctors and nurses choose to use themselves, because most people will have lighter periods or no periods at all with that coil. And say if you're perimenopausal, that can be half of the HRT that you need.
Oh,
because
really?
you need progesterone and an estrogen, and that can be the progesterone part, and then you could just take the estrogen. So it's really useful for people when they're approaching the menopause to have that as a system, because actually it can really help with that. So what you were suggesting was Kylena, which is the same as the Mirena coil, just a lower dose of hormone. So it's, which is okay, but a lot of people, either a lot of clinics don't do them. That's the first thing to say, just in case lots of women go out to the clinic and say, well, do you have this particular type of coil? They might not have them. And the Mirena is generally preferable if possible, because it's more kind of effective with the period symptoms than the Kylena. But I don't know what your experience has been, whether you've still had periods on the Kylena or not.
Well, you know what? I think last year, was it during lockdown, I got it changed to Kylina from a couple coil, right? So I've had it maybe for like, I don't know, a year or slightly less than that. And that was after me for ages kind of thinking, I don't want to go back, I don't want to get changed just yet because, yeah, oh my god, the experience and stuff. But it wasn't that bad. It was not great, you know, but then I hate smear tests as well. But anyway, so I got it changed and I did have periods, but they were lighter. And over the last couple of months, there have been basically barely anything, but it's, yeah, been something, but like literally, yes, I just need to wear a panty liner kind of thing, not, yeah, even a pad kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, what the hell is going on? And for me, like, I know it sounds really stupid, but some people are like, oh, I never want to have a period again. For me, like, after being on the pill like ages ago, I kind of feel like, for me to have a period, I know what's happening with my own body and I know my own body's rhythms and I know my mood changes, I know my weight fluctuations and I know why this is happening. Like, do you see what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
it's not being masked by anything. I know exactly, yeah, what my body is doing. I'm anticipating, oh, I'm crying today and I want to eat all these crisps and sweets because I'm going to be my period, you know. So I kind of like knowing that in a way.
So there's two different schools of thought, and absolutely we have a lot of women who feel that way and that they want a period. And what's really interesting is that a lot of women who've been on the pill, so which is the combined contraceptive pill that you take for 21 days and then have a break, that break was only basically emphasized by the Pope because the church wanted to see that women were having a bleed because it was natural. But that's really not actually scientifically necessary. So what the new suggestion is that your break doesn't have to be 7 days, it can just be 4 days. And actually you can take 3 pill packets back to back, not have a period for 3 months. So for someone that's working a lot, doing shift work, or has major events in their life, they can do that without a problem. Mm-hmm. But it's really funny to see where the history of all of this has come from, because it was imposed,
yep,
by the patriarchy, essentially, yep, who weren't having to experience it.
Oh my God. It's literally like imposed by the patriarchy, like, no, women, this is how you're going to do contraception. Like, hello, yeah, you have a penis, what are you talking about? Crazy. So the Kylina, if I'm saying I don't want so many hormones going around in me and stuff, is that the best one for me?
Yeah, it's not a bad option. So the copper coil would have been the best option, but obviously that had its pros and cons. Kylina is a very good next best thing.
Okay, some people also say with the Marina coil that it makes them gain weight. Is that just a myth or is that true?
So anecdotally, there are lots of different experiences that women have on all different types of contraception. So you will find women who have been on the combined pill, for example, who will swear that they gain weight from it, or be on the coil and they swear that they gain weight, fluid retention, mood swings. These things, that if you look closely enough at the side effects, they will all be listed. But I must emphasise that everyone's experience is different. And it's not the type of contraception that just says, yes, you go on this and you will gain weight. Because that's not going to be the case.
So what are the most popular ones or most effective? Like, let's talk about the pill. Because the pill is like, you know, a lot of people are on the pill, right? And they've been on the pill for years and will continue.
So the combined pills, so that's like your microgynon type pill. So that's 21 days on and 7 day break. Mm-hmm. That is the most commonly prescribed contraceptive in the UK. The Marina coil is the most popular amongst doctors and nurses to use themselves, because actually I think what people value the most is I appreciate that you want a period every month, and actually a lot of people do. But if you don't want that, then these are two very good options to help you control not having a bleed. All methods of contraception have varying degrees of efficacy. So the coils are actually really, really good. If you don't want to have to think about something every day and you want something that's effective, very, very good. However, just important to mention that they don't protect against sexually transmitted infections. So that is something just to bear in mind, because it depends on what stage of life you're at. And that's the same with the pill. So pills are only effective if people take them effectively. If you're someone that remembers a pill every day, you're fine. if you're someone who has a bit more of a chaotic lifestyle, then forgetting pills can be quite easy. And actually, then you'll need more morning after pills, and then that's a different type of hormone that you're then exposing yourself to. So it really, there is no best. All of them have their pros and cons, but it's really, really worth that conversation because there are so many different types. I mean, we haven't even touched on the injections, the implant, you know, people swear by these things, and it really just depends on what works for you and your body.
I mean, somebody in my family swears by the implant, and you know what, and also she's also complaining about it, like, oh, I think this has happened to me because of the implant, I think I've gained weight because of the implant, I think I'm really moody because of the implant, these are all side effects, but still she will not take out that implant because she doesn't want to take a pill every day, I don't know, doesn't want to do the coil or whatever, and then just that, so then it's like, okay, this is what I have to live with.
Yeah, so I mean, for those who don't know about the implant, because I guess it's not one of the ones that is talked about a huge amount, but it's essentially like a matchstick size rod that just sits in the bottom of your arm. So you can feel it if you rub over your skin, but they just literally put a tiny nick in the skin and it sits under the skin, and it can do that for 3 years. So some people find that it gives them some irregular bleeding. So if you don't like irregular bleeding, that can be a problem. But it is an effective method of contraception for people that enjoy it. But like you said, it does come with its own side effects. You just really don't know until you try. Yeah.
Is it basically doing what the pill is doing, but then just releasing it slowly into your bloodstream? Is that what it's doing?
Yes, but a different type of hormone. So more towards what the mini pill is giving you than the combined pill.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then how is the injection different from that?
So the injection is once every 12 weeks. So again, similar ingredients to what we just talked about. But so you'll have a similar side effect profile, but that's really helpful for people that don't want to take a pill every day, but don't have the need for 3 years or 5 years of contraception. So, but if you're needle phobic, the injection's just off the list to begin with. So there are some people that will really go for having the injection.
Yeah.
I mean, 12 weeks of contraception at a time is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Rather than taking a pill every day. But it's for people who, I've seen it a lot in people who are on the younger end of the spectrum, who don't want to take a pill every day, but also might want to get pregnant in the near future.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's reversible. I mean, these are all reversible, but they're all long-acting reversible contraception. So it is long-acting, but not as long-acting as the other ones. So if you want to have a baby soon-ish, but not right now, it's a good option.
And with the pill, right, people, when we're talking about people who want to have a baby, right, I know people who have taken the pill for years and then been like, oh, I want to have a baby now, I've stopped taking the pill. Does it take a long time to come out your system?
Well, the thing is, technically, it shouldn't. However, we know that women do, it does take a little while for the hormones to readjust. So imagine it's not the hormones from the pill that's physically still in your body. It's the fact that your body has got used to having a daily hormone. So your ovaries need to reassert themselves to be able to ovulate. So it has to rebalance. For some women, it takes about a minute. They stop taking the pill and their periods go back to normal immediately. Some women say it can take them 3 months, some 6 months, some even up to a year just to get back to normal. So it's not that the hormone is still in your system, it's that your body has got used to the hormone being in your system and is trying to recalibrate itself month on month to get back to your normal. What we also forget is you know how you said that the pill and other things, they mask your normal. So imagine that you went on the pill when you're 18 and you're on it for 10 years. When you were 17, you might have had regular periods, but actually your normal periods might have become irregular during that time. So you'll come out and say, well, actually, now I'm off the pill, my periods are irregular. But actually, that might have been a process that was happening in your body in those 10 years, but we wouldn't have known. So it's just important that women, you know, are aware that these things do happen, but to not attribute all changes that happen to the pill, because our bodies also change alongside without any hormones.
I mean, from my experience, I've experimented with the pill over the last God knows how many years. But I think like after I got married, and this was ages ago, I went to the doctor for something and then she was like, oh, you're married now. Do you want to go on the pill if you don't want to have a baby straight away? I was like, oh, okay. And then I think it just made me, I don't know, like I felt down on it, like I didn't feel right, and that wasn't the mini pill, it was the pill, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, nah, not for me, came off that. Anyway, after that I had a baby quite soon, which I was quite happy with. But after my second child, which was only like 18 months after my first child, I was like, oh, okay, I don't really want to have another kid 18 months after this kid. So I went on the mini pill and that was fine. And then I was on that for quite a few years. And I don't know why, maybe I wanted to have another child. I don't know. But anyway, so I came off of that. And then I'd been fine on it. But when I came off of it, I don't know what happened. But I literally was like, oh my God. Like I felt like I was so anxious. I was felt like I was on the verge of an anxiety attack. This was like within like 2 weeks of coming off it. And I kept thinking to myself, what is it? What is happening? Like, have I got a lot of stress on my plate? I've been more stressed than this. You know, you can deal with it, Rena. What is going on with you? Then I was like, oh yeah, I've just come off the pill. Is that what it is? Like, I literally just didn't feel right for some time. Is that normal?
So some women can experience these things, and it's not uncommon, because your body is ingesting a hormone each day. And with that hormone, we are getting changes, and those are changes that we want to happen for contraceptive purposes. But it's like we were saying with coming off any pill, that your body's trying to readjust, and sometimes it might overshoot your normal to try and figure out where your calibration is. And that can happen. It's not unheard of, but I wouldn't say that it's not common to feel that way after coming off the pill. I do hear that very commonly when women go on the pill. Like you mentioned, especially worth being careful with previous history of depression, because it can make you feel worse.
Even after that, I think I then went to go on a different pill, and within a week, I had spots on my back, and I previously have suffered from acne all over my back and my chest for years and years, right? So within a week, that was starting to come back, and I was feeling so down. And I looked at the side effects, which no one had explained to me. Depression and acne were common side effects. And I'm like, oh my God, why was I given this? I don't understand why I was given this when I've had a history of these things in the past. Like, I really feel like, I don't know, like, it just felt like the side effects weren't talked about at all.
No, it's true. And you know, anecdotally, I can see that a lot of my friends who have been in for these consultations haven't been counselled on the main side effects. Now, what's really interesting, though, is that it's almost impossible to go through every side effect of the pill. And I think there's a presumption that women do a fair amount of research. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. For example, the acne side effect, you're more likely to counsel someone who is in their teens or 20s that their spots might become worse. But if you were later on in life, then that wouldn't have felt so relevant. Even though it was relevant to you, to the doctor it might not have felt so relevant. So it's really difficult, but hopefully from this podcast that women are listening to, it helps them to want to read about what they are taking, just so that they can do their research and then ask the right questions. Because often what happens is you've got a 10-minute appointment and a lot of things will happen in that time. And actually counselling about every side effect. So for example, with a combined pill, the blood clot risk was just circulating all over Instagram when the AstraZeneca vaccine came out. Now, a lot of women then said they were never counselled on this at all. And it's bizarre, because I would always counsel someone on it, but I can understand why that wouldn't happen in a consultation. And there are so many risks with every medication. If you read the list of side effects on paracetamol, no one will ever want to take it again.
Okay, so these are a few messages from women that I know. I kind of had a little chat with some of them about contraception, and they're anonymous, of course. So somebody said, I don't use any pills or coil, can't do it, don't see why I should, and also it makes me go weird and hormonal. I'm not allowed to take the pill either because I get migraines. Okay. Is that a thing? Pill and migraines?
Yeah, so if you get migraines with aura, and aura is basically when you see flashing lights or some sort of visual sensation, generally speaking, before you get a headache, mm-hmm. then that is a relative contraindication for the combined pill. And yeah. that's because it increases your risk of blood clots.
Okay. Here's some more. So I decided to get the coil because my mum had it and it worked for her. I was so scared, but it was totally fine. I've read recently about Naga Munshetty and others saying it is a horrendous experience, but not for me. I think the difference was I went to a family planning clinic and they do this all the time on a day out and a day out basis. And it's better than the GP. I told them I was really scared and worried about it. But they taught me through it and it was over so quickly. So that's a really positive experience.
Yeah.
And somebody else as well. I couldn't be bothered with taking pills every day. It was a really easy process. So this is a coil. A little uncomfortable whilst getting it and for a few hours after, but otherwise so easy. And plus point, my periods are non-existent, along with zero period pains. I don't know actually when my period is due anymore.
That's amazing. And, you know, that's so good to hear that variety, especially after the experiences that we talked about at the beginning, because certainly don't want to put women off having that conversation because it is such good contraception and it can really help, you know, with your periods and things. And some women really just go in and it's just, like I said, they just go in and they come out and it's like nothing's ever happened.
So here's another message now. I know my cycle and I'm careful between day 17 to 22. So
okay. This
person basically doesn't use anything and it's just about that kind of looking at the calendar thing. And they're talking about withdrawal basically. And I remember going to India one time and one of my cousins who's a doctor there, she was just saying to me, she was like, the best method of contraception, it is external ejaculation. I was like, okay.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. I know. And then I'm like, okay. So, but it works for some people. I don't know. What do you think about it? I seriously, it scares me because I'm like, oh my God, do you want to end up with more kids?
So it's not a recommended method of contraception. It's not scientifically effective. And the reason being, I said this to some colleagues the other day and they weren't even aware that sperm can survive for 7 days. So the reason that family planning and withdrawal doesn't really necessarily work is because you have pre-ejaculate and in that can contain sperm and they can survive for 7 days. So even if you're doing all of your meticulous planning, that can still happen and there's nothing you can do once it's been done. And then afterwards, and these people won't be seeking emergency contraception because they don't see it as a risk. Officially, absolutely, I would not recommend it. I understand that people do it. I understand that people swear by it. But medically, certainly not a recommended or effective method of contraception. Just a clean line.
I mean,
there.
I will say that... I will say that the person who said this wouldn't be the end of the world if they got pregnant again.
Yes.
You know, and I feel like, you know... I do know friends, let's say, that have done that and ended up with another kid. So, you know, it's as far as I'm concerned, it's not the greatest. But, you know, like I'm saying, if it's worked for some people and they're open to another pregnancy, then...
Yes. And I think things like natural cycles, for example, are more family planning. So it's more for people who, like you said, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they got pregnant. But they are trying to plan effectively for a pregnancy perhaps a few months down the line.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's absolutely fine. And conversely, people use all of those methods the other way when they're trying really hard to get pregnant. So tracking your ovulation and things like that. So there's nothing wrong with knowing about these things so that when they do want to conceive, it's less of a problem as well.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Good old condoms, right? I mean, I know that they're not like as effective as these other methods, right? But then they're the ones that are they?
Well, 98% effective when used correctly. So I think the main issue is actually people's use of them. So it's mainly the fact that people don't use it for the whole period, for example. They just use it partially. So that can make it less effective. Obviously, rips and tears, that can be problematic. And if that
what
does
do you mean
happen,
partially? They only use it partially.
So
as in
during
they
the,
do some
the whole,
stuff.
Yes.
Without then, it. And then they're like, oh, yeah, might as well put one on now halfway through.
Exactly. Right. So they are 98% effective when used correctly, but the correct use is from the beginning to the end. And that actually isn't what happens in a lot of practical settings. So, and the good thing about barrier types of contraception is it's the only thing that's going to help you with regards to sexually transmitted infections. Yes. And, you know, I have done a fair amount of work as far as a normal GP would have done in a sexual health clinic. And there's a reason that sexual health clinics are still open and, you know, busy. And that's because, you know, people don't use barrier contraception enough. And if you do have multiple partners or if you're in a new relationship, it's really important that people have that conversation, get tested, and then, you know, carry on or continue to use barrier contraception, because without all of those things, you know, the risk of infection is always there. And I did say at one point, there's a reason that we're still in employment in sexual health, because if everyone did all these things perfectly, then there would be no sexually transmitted infections. So
and you know what, one thing I've noticed, it's a bit random, but like in the movies, right, nobody talks about contraception. Like nobody mentions the C word, condom, even, like, you know. And I don't know, like, I don't mean having random conversations about contraception. I mean, like,
yes, maybe these, you're right.
But now, like, in any drama series, right, there is a sex scene in it, and the sex scene's quite full on. Like, you feel like you're actually in the room with the characters, right, with the actors, because it's so, like, full on. And we've got this massive TVs, and we're like, oh my God, you know, I feel like I'm intruding on actual sex. But anyway, so they don't talk about it. Nobody's like, oh, you know, are you on the pill, or what's happening, you know? And it's like there's no conversations, or there's no like, oh, shall I get a condom? They just like go into it. And and so it's like, you know, for some people who are watching those, I'm just saying, like, younger people, like, what are they seeing? I don't know. I'm just thinking, is it just me? And then you've got porn, which is like, you know, forget that. That's a whole other thing. Yeah. And I don't know whether they do that in porn, but this is what we are shown in the media.
Yes. No, it's true. And I think there are lack of conversations around contraception. And I always implore my friends to have these conversations with each other and with their medical friends, to ask the right questions, so that when they go to their doctor to have that appointment, then they are empowered to ask the right questions. Because like I said, so often you are just in that moment. And then, you know, we always get that there's always a pattern in sexual health clinics, that you always have the morning after pill first thing on a Monday. You will be doing morning after pill consultations, and that's because all of these things that, like you're saying, have happened, that, you know, and it's natural, of course these things happen, but it's so much better to have that preventative conversation, because even morning after pills, they're not 100% effective, and they need to be taken as soon as possible after the event, which, you know, it might have happened on Saturday, and then the clinic's not open till Monday. So, you know, we really have to have these preventative conversations as much as possible.
But isn't there a limit of how much you can take the morning after pill as well? Because I'm sure there's people that do take that regularly.
Yeah, they do. And you know, that's the beauty of having a clinic, because if you have a clinic that they come to, or they come to their GP, then we at least have a record. Whereas actually now you can buy it from the pharmacy. So you could just be in any part of London, go to the pharmacy, answer some questions and get the morning after pill, which is great and important for accessibility. But actually, you need to really track how much people are using this, because it is exactly what it's called. It's emergency contraception. It's not normal contraception. But, you know, yes, there is a limit. In answer to your question, yes, there is a limit. But generally speaking, more than once a month is difficult to then manage. So if you have two accidents in 1 month, because you can only prescribe a certain amount in a certain order. So there's two different types of morning after pill and then the copper coil. Mm-hmm. And it really, I mean, I won't go into it too much because it is quite complicated. It's about when you have the unprotected sex in the cycle and when you ovulate and when you take the contraception. Yeah. So it's all kind of, it's not straightforward, but you can't just take it every weekend for a whole month, because you just can't. No one will give it to you if you've had it already in the cycle. So prevention is better, always.
Mm-hmm. And then how old should women be before we stop taking contraceptives?
Yes, this is a really interesting question. So menopause is when you have an absence of periods for 1 year, or if you're under 50, then for 2 years. So the difficulty is we all have this thing, perimenopause, which is when the periods are irregular. So you might not have had a period for about 6 months and think, well, that's it now, I can't get pregnant. However, the chances are still there. So we know that the risk and chances of pregnancy go down with age. So even from age 30, they just start going down. But we do see pregnancies in late 40s and 50s, rarely, but without any assistance. And so it's really important to know that unless you have fully reached the menopause, you do generally need contraception. So roughly speaking, until around the age of 50, roughly.
Okay. Okay. And all these things that we've talked about, you know, apart from condoms, which obviously men can buy and have and they need to put on, because the female condom, does anyone even use that? Like, I know it exists, but it's like, I don't know, anybody really who's ever used that.
It's very old school. It's not really a UK-based thing. In Europe, sometimes they can be more popular. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult. It can be a bit fiddly, and you tend to have to use things like spermicide with it. So it's not the easiest thing to use, no.
Okay. So apart from condoms, the other things are just solely up to women to use, right? It's our problem, you know, not the man's problem. We need to sort it out. Sometimes have a lot of discomfort, you know, depending on what it is. What can men do apart from put on a condom? Vasectomy? I don't see a big queue of people lining up for a vasectomy.
No, you're completely right. So to look at the two kind of types of sterilisation, you've got vasectomy for men and female sterilisation for women. People do opt for both of these things. The failure rate in female sterilisation is about 1 in 200, and the failure rate for vasectomy is about 1 in 2,000. So actually, vasectomy is very effective compared to a sterilisation for a woman, and it's a lot less invasive, because for a woman's sterilisation, we have to go inside the body. For men, it's outside the body. The only thing to be aware of for sterilisation is, although vasectomies, there is kind of an area where vasectomies can be reversed, we have to think of it as an irreversible procedure, because there's no guarantee that it can be reversed. So the difficult conversation to have is, do you not want any more children ever? Now, that ever is a really difficult bit, because what the kind of questions that you have to ask yourself, which are really difficult, which is, if everyone was to die, so say you were the man and your wife was to die and all your children were to die, would you then never want a child again? And that is the difficult question, because it's a difficult question, isn't it? Because it's not a reversible decision. So say there was a car crash and everyone died and he was the only one that was alive. And then it was saying, well, would he never want the possibility of ever having a child with anyone ever again? That's the hard bit. See, it's a hard question, isn't it?
Well, I kind of don't know any men that would say, yeah, I want a vasectomy after that, you know, which is probably why I don't know many men who've had them. But yeah, wow, okay. And
that's the thing. For a woman, for sterilisation, you would have to think that if my husband died and all of my children died, is there any chance that I would never want a child again with anyone, ever? And that is the difficulty. Because you're content with your current situation, assuming that nothing's going to change or nothing catastrophic will happen. But we have to really think, worst case scenario, would you be okay with that? And that's where the difficulty lies.
I mean, the thing is, obviously, women have menopause, right? So then that's fine up to a certain point where you said that we stop using contraception and we can't have a kid and whatever. Men can technically father a kid when they're, 100 years old. Yeah. Young kids with God knows who. So, it's kind of more their problem, really, that's this whole contraceptive thing, because they're the ones that are going to be shooting out that live stuff that can, do you know what I mean?
There are conversations going on about male contraception, but at the same time, you know, it's very much in early stages, and I think it would take a lot of societal adoption for that shift to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, you know, on, for example, on TikTok, they had some men who were reading about what women have to go, like reading just the pill side effects. Did you know the pill can cause death? Death! We're expecting women to take this pill. And it was just really interesting because I think that whole social media push was the first time that men have actually started to have that thought process that women have to do something outside of what they see.
I really feel like men should, I don't know, revere us, worship us. Like, you know, they want to have sex with us, right? They don't want to be a dad a lot of the time. So we need to sort it out and make sure that we don't let that happen, you know, and go through all of these things, as we've been talking about, hormonal side effects, getting the coil fitted, you know, whatever we want to do. So, yes, I really think guys should worship the ground we walk on, basically.
It's a lot, you know, like even just having this conversation, I feel like there's so much that we're not able to even cover. And you just think women have so many choices and decisions they need to make. And the onus is currently pretty much all on the women. So I just want, you know, given the current situation, I want women to take the time to do their research and make sure that they're using whatever is the right choice for them and their bodies at the current stage of their life. It might change. People swear by the pill in their 20s. They will swear by the coil in their 40s, you know, and that's fine. You know, and it's all right to have that open conversation and change your mind if something's not working for you.
Where should people get more info from? Where, because, you know, on Google, you can put it in, you can get loads of random websites. Like, where's the best place to have all this info, all the side effects and pros and cons and everything?
So the best place is the NHS website. I even had a scroll of it before we came on here because I wanted to make sure that it is a sound place to start. And I think to get a good overview of the different types of contraception, it's a really good website. There are more detailed websites, so there's the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health, and they do really great leaflets. So if you've had a look at the NHS website and you think, I want to know more about the coil, FSRH, mm-hmm. and they have fantastic leaflets, patient information leaflets, and then conversation with your doctor.
Okay, well, Nizja, thank you so much. I really appreciated you coming on here and giving us your expert opinion on this thing that nobody really talks about, but so obviously needs to talk about. but I thank you everybody for listening, and I hope this has been useful for you. Please do share this with anybody who you think would benefit from listening. Also just, you know, if someone's covered, they've got all the contraception covered, this is good to listen to because it's like, look at all the things, the different experiences that women go through, you know. Nobody's the same, and it's good to find out what other people are doing as well, and also your other options for different stages of life, as Nizja is saying. So yes, thanks for listening. Make sure you follow this if you haven't already. Subscribe, obviously. Also leave a nice review, that'd be really nice, and help people to find the podcast on the Apple Podcast page. Thank you for listening, and if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at Rina Deanna Bill or at Sisterhood on Mommy Imperfect. You can follow Nizja as well. Nizja, what's your handle?
I'm at Dr_Dancing on Instagram.
Cool. So she is basically the dancing doctor, and definitely follow her, check out her videos and all her dance classes and everything. So listen, I'm going to be back again next week. Until then, take care. Bye.